Before we begin this podcast, I'd like to tell you about a special deal. Subscribe today to The Spectator for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with, here's the magic bit, a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast, a series of discussions about American politics, power and prejudices. This year, 2024, is an election year in America, a presidential election year. And so we will be doing two podcasts a week rather than our usual one because we want to and because we know you can't get enough Americano in your life. I am delighted to be joined once again. It's been a while since we've had this particular guest on, but I'm delighted to be joined by Miranda Devine from the New York Post, who I want to talk to about Harrison Butker, the American football kicker who has found himself in hot water in recent days. And I think this is one of those stories that has been quite big in America but hasn't really come across the Atlantic. So, Miranda, if you would be so kind, would you please explain the story of Harrison Butker and what's been going on in recent weeks?
Yes, thank you. Look, Harrison Butker is a very talented kicker in at the team that won the Super Bowl this year, the Green Bay Packers, if I've got that name right.
Kansas City Chiefs.
Kansas City Chiefs. You can see I'm just such an expert on the NFL. So Harrison Butker is the kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs, and he was asked to go and give a speech, a commencement speech at the graduation class for 2024 for a Catholic college called Benedictine College in Kansas. And he did so, and he was speaking to an audience that was very receptive to his message, which was he paid tribute to his wife and said that she had leaned into the most important vocation of all, and that was to be a wife and a mother. And she's the mother of their two children. She's pregnant with their third. And he choked up when he was talking about her and how wonderful she is and how important motherhood is. And so he said to the women in the audience, he said, "I know that, you know, there will be some of you that will go on to great jobs in the C-suite, but I also know that all of you sitting here understand that your best calling is to be a mother." And he was right, because that was his audience. And I'm sure that every single woman in that audience had that aspiration, because otherwise they wouldn't be at a Catholic conservative college that had asked Harrison Butker to come and speak. But of course, his speech went viral for all the wrong reasons. He was called a sexist pig. And, you know, there were calls from the local newspaper to get him kicked off the team and replaced with a woman. It was just farcical. And I think, you know, at the same time, all these commencement speeches are going on across the country, and, you know, they're woke and they're awful. And they're not about real things. They don't give the kids, as he did, some sort of spiritual or moral fodder to go on with the rest of their lives. He's not laying down the law. He's just saying, this is the way that I found and my wife found, and that's incredibly fulfilling for us and will be for you and for society.
So as you say, this is the season of these speeches, and Joe Biden gave one recently too, yes. Didn't he? Tell us about that one.
Well, Joe Biden went to this historic black college, all black, all male, and called Morehouse, very prestigious school. And he stood up there in the most appalling way, giving this dark, vile speech, telling these young black men that America hated them, that they loved the country more than the country loved them. He said, you know, you have to work 10 times harder than anyone else to get anywhere, that, you know, you have to get the talk from your parents so you don't get shot by white supremacist police. It was really the darkest, most awful speech. And it was given because Joe Biden is failing with the black vote, especially young male blacks. I mean, if this is his way of trying to win them back, good luck, because that, you could tell from the audience, they were turned off. Harrison Butker got a standing ovation. There were hardly any claps in the sort of you know, the spots that obviously the speechwriter had written in for pauses for the audience reaction, there was just a smattering of applause, you know. And afterwards, there were interviews of some of the audience, and these young men just said, oh, I didn't really know what he was talking about. You know, it didn't really do anything for me. Completely uninspirational and negative and pessimistic. So I'm glad they didn't take it on board.
Well, that touches on something quite interesting, which is Joe Biden's popularity or lack of popularity. Because I think you've spent a lot of time writing articles about Hunter Biden and so on. And I'm sure that contributes towards the general dislike of Biden. But it's bigger than that, isn't it? I think we're reaching a stage now where he's just not liked by a lot of people. And it's not about whether he's corrupt. It's not about whether he's not empathetic, which is the big Biden talking point. It's about whether people like him and they don't respond to him in the way they did 4 years ago.
No, and they don't respond to him in the way they do to Donald Trump. You know, everywhere he goes, there are just empty stages, empty streets. He doesn't inspire anyone with confidence or affection. And it's ironic because he came to office with great expectations after promising that he would unite the country, that he was a man of empathy who would be able to heal the country after the horrors of COVID. In fact, he did the opposite. I mean, you talked about empathy. The Afghanistan botched withdrawal was a classic example of his complete lack of empathy. He is the opposite of what he portrayed himself as when the bodies of the 13 servicemen and women came back for this dignified display that they have at Dover Air Force Base. Joe Biden was standing there, and in front of all the families, he just kept looking at his watch like, oh, get this thing over. And then when he talked to them privately afterwards, they were furious because all he did was talk about his own son, who had not died in action. He died of a brain tumour many years after he spent 1 year in Iraq as a lawyer. So they were, to a man and woman, just disgusted by his attitude. And look, I think the corruption is part of it because he portrayed himself always as Honest Joe from Scranton, middle class Joe, Joe Biden, who, you know, was the poorest man in Congress, a great family man. And in fact, what you see is a completely dysfunctional family in which he sent his surviving son, Hunter, who was a drug addict, off to be the bag man for the family and putting him in harm's way. You know, putting an addict in front of gushing torrents of unaccountable cash is just a recipe for disaster. And so it proved for poor Hunter. And I think the corruption aspect of that was a surprise to people. They had believed this mythology that Joe Biden had built up over his 50-year political career. And then there's just the overriding fact of the policies, the fact that you've had, you know, as many as 10 million illegal migrants flooded into the country. That's affecting every city. And inflation is just killing people. And he keeps on saying, look, Bidenomics has fixed it. There's no inflation. I started off by saying it's transitory. It doesn't exist. It's you know, now he's saying that it's Donald Trump's fault that he inherited a 9% inflation rate when he inherited a 1.4% inherited a 1.4% inflation rate. So he also lies and tells tall tales. I think people don't take him seriously. And then over it all is his age, just the optics of the man, even if you're not paying attention to much else. Anytime you get a glimpse of him, he just looks like the living dead. He shuffles, he stumbles, he looks half asleep. He's either half asleep or he's so jacked up on whatever they give him behind the scenes that he's like this screaming madman with eyes, you know, like pulled open by matchsticks, just yelling at the clouds. So it's altogether a terrible package.
Well, let's talk a bit about Hunter Biden. So you wrote this book, Laptop from Hell, which was groundbreaking in many ways. Turn of the year, it felt like maybe the Republicans would go after Hunter Biden as part of their election strategy. It seems like they've backed off. Am I reading it wrong?
I don't think you have. And I think James Comer, who's been the leading congressman on this, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, is still doing his best. But you have to understand that the lead, the very narrow lead that the Republicans came into Congress with in January 2023, has now been eroded down to, I think it's four and there is such dysfunction. They kicked out their speaker. There's a real sort of civil war going on within the Republican Party between, I guess, the Trumpists and the others. And, you know, there are a lot of bomb throwers in there that want to get rid of the current speaker, Mike Johnson. So, you know, heading into an election, they need to get that under control. And so I think that they're just trying to stick to their knitting. And for some members, I mean, I disagree, but for a significant number of members and for influencers, conservative influencers outside, they see the Hunter Biden case as a distraction. And as well, you've had a very clever, as usual, narrative forming coalition with the Democrats in Congress and Hunter Biden's very expensive lawyers, including this guy, Kevin Morris, his sugar brother, who's a Hollywood lawyer who made a fortune out of South Park. You know, I think he made $200 million on one deal alone. And he's a very creative showman. And so he's been crafting this quite clever narrative behind the scenes. He's making a documentary of Hunter. It tries to make every you know, lemons into lemonade. And then they've got the media on their side as well, because, you know, so much of the Washington Post and New York Times and so on have a vested interest in keeping Joe Biden in office, even though the New York Times, just lately, their new editor, Joe Kahn, has said, no, that's not their job. But they certainly have a vested interest in keeping the egg off their face. And they all, to a man and woman, ignored the laptop story when we first broke it just before the election, 3 weeks before the election in 2020. And they traduced it, and they took the Biden campaign line and their lies at face value. And only many months after the election did they start to grudgingly acknowledge that, well, yeah, the laptop was real. And yes, Joe Biden did meet Hunter Biden's Ukrainian paymaster in Washington, D.C. While he was vice president, etc. And so I think we've moved a long way since then, but still I don't think they're quite willing to accept the full extent of Joe Biden's involvement in his brother and son's influence peddling scheme around the world, and what ramifications that had for national security, and how that may have played into the Ukraine war today, for instance, and relations with China.
Do you think that Bill Clinton, everybody knew there were lots of dodgy stories about the Clintons. Some right-wing media reported them, did very well if there'd been internet traffic at that time, which there sort of was, I guess, maybe, but early days. It would have been huge stories, and they were huge stories at the time. And yet, Clinton, in the minds of most people, was not a corrupt president. Do you think maybe with all your work that you've done, do you think maybe people in 10 years' time will see you as a sort of headbanger who was kind of banging on about the corruption of Joe Biden, and then everybody just moves on? They don't really care whether it's true or not.
Look, probably. I mean, the difference with Bill Clinton, though, is, remember, the Republicans went after him for having the affair with Monica Lewinsky, and it just became very prurient about red dresses and, you know, mints and so on. And I think the American people just gave their verdict, which was mind your own business and stop being such prudes and just leave him alone. If he does a good job as president, that's all we care about. So in this case, I think it's different, because this is about selling out the office. This is about, you know, altering America's relationship with important countries like Ukraine, like Russia, like China, based or perverting that relationship based on, you know, not a huge amount of money. I mean, you're talking about, I don't know, $20 million max that's been found that went into the pockets of the Biden family. But, you know, this also goes to Joe Biden's character. And you can see from his very earliest days in office, he is not what he portrayed himself as. I think people see him as a liar and a guy who's just not been straight with the American people and lives a lavish lifestyle with lavish houses that being the poorest man in Congress doesn't explain. So I do think that in this election, that is part of the negatives, the baggage that he carries. And you can see that in the polls. You know, I think we're seeing now the majority of Americans do believe that in several polls that Joe Biden was involved in his son's corrupt dealings.
And this is something that has changed since 2020, because Biden won in 2020, But Biden won in 2020 largely because a lot of independents thought he's a reliable guy. He's a silent generation guy. We remember him from the Obama era. And we think that he's a good person. And that, I think, has collapsed, has it not?
Oh, absolutely. That mythology about Joe Biden has just been completely demolished by himself, by the way he's bungled so many issues, whether it's, you know, Bidenomics or Afghanistan. American people don't like the fact that we're embroiled in the Ukraine war. They just don't trust him. They see every day when they go to the supermarket, they see how much prices have gone up. And yet they see this president telling them, you don't understand, you know, I've done a great job, prices aren't high, I've brought inflation down. And they're going, no, you didn't. What are you talking about? And it just turns them off. Look, I think everything about him that people bought into initially, they found was a lie. And so I don't know how they can bring themselves. I mean, the only way they will bring themselves to vote for him again is because they find Donald Trump so much more reprehensible. And so it's an ugly election where it's between, you know, the devil, you know, one devil on one hand and devil on the other hand.
The two devils, I think, you both know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But I wonder, having written this book about Hunter Biden, do you find people talk to you about Hunter Biden? Is it something that gets discussed quite a lot, or more than you would sense from the kind of media conversation that we probably all hear?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the book was a massive bestseller. And I wrote it in, when did it come out? 2021, late 2021. And it's still selling in hardcover. I'm still talking to people about it nonstop. I've just finished a sequel to it. And, you know, I'm sure there's I know that there's anticipation for that because it's about the cover-up. I think that's something that people haven't fully grasped. They have some inkling that Joe Biden and Hunter Biden were being protected, and particularly since these whistleblowers have come forward from the tax office, the Internal Revenue Service, incredibly brave. I mean, it's out of central casting whistleblowers who've sacrificed their careers and being retaliated against all the time. And they came forward with all this evidence that the 5-year investigation into Hunter in Delaware had been nobbled and slow walked and obstructed, and in all the different ways it was, and that Joe Biden was intervening, or his agents were intervening in this case. And also, there's evidence that the CIA was involved in protecting Hunter Biden on behalf of Joe Biden. The CIA's sort of shadowy hand is behind a lot of, you can detect it anyway, behind a lot of this Hunter Biden, Joe Biden story. And so all of that feeds into, you know, the stories about the censorship industrial complex, as Michael Schellenberger calls it, the fact that the New York Post stories were immediately suppressed and censored by social media, and that could have made a difference to the election. Polls show if people had known about Joe Biden. And so that amounted to election interference. You know, I think the Hunter Biden story has just tapped into a sort of constellation of disturbing stories that people are bubbling away in people's minds as concerning, and things that they're worried about in the direction of the United States. And part of that is this intelligence community that's out of control and bringing them into wars they don't want to be part of, and lying to them constantly, a la, you know, the second Iraq war with weapons of mass destruction. And, you know, the corruption element of it is just a small element. And I guess that's Washington, D.C., you know, since its inception. But the fact that you now have this vast cover-up elevated this story to something much bigger and much more portentous.
I think what you're saying is that the deep state is no longer a conspiracy theory. It is, as Steve Bannon always said, the in-your-face state. And I think people are increasingly reacting to that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, look, that's a really good way of putting it, exactly. And, you know, I mean, I hate saying deep state because it has become such a cliche, but it's the security apparatus, the intelligence organizations, State Department, you know, what's called the blob. Certainly in the story that I've been working on for so long, they have been involved in protecting Joe Biden and his family in in, you know, so many ways from the beginning. And you can only believe that it's because Joe Biden has been such a useful puppet, at least for a faction of this group, in terms of, you know, every war that America's been involved in, he's been a cheerleader for, although he's pretended not to be in certain cases because he liked to act as a you know, as if he was an ornery guy. You know, even China joining the World Trade Organization in 2001, which was an unmitigated disaster for middle America, Bill Clinton was negative about that. Most of his party was not for it. It was the Republicans that were for it. And it was Joe Biden who, for, you know, more than a decade, was the chairman of the very powerful Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He championed it, and he brought his... you know, his party across to narrowly win that vote. So he's been very instrumental in, and he's a real hawk. I mean, a crazy hawk. You know, he used to get pulled back. No one would go along with him. But, you know, he wanted to bomb Kosovo. He wanted to, he's been involved in every kind of militaristic action in the most aggressive fashion, except he claims that he didn't want to go into the second Iraq war. Now, I don't know what game he was playing there, but I don't think that's quite true.
He is a hard read, and he did vote for it, as you say. Miranda Devine, what is your next book called? I should have plugged it earlier.
Oh, that's all right. It's not out till September. It's called The Big Guy.
The Big
and
Guy.
It's The Big Guy, and it's the story of the cover-up for Joe Biden. And Joe Biden, of course, was the big guy.
For some of our listeners, The Big Guy is a reference to an email that was discovered on Hunter Biden's laptop, which is the subject of your first book, which appears to refer, or people think, refers to Joe Biden. Just quickly, Miranda, give me a percentage certainty. How certain are you that the big guy is Joe Biden?
Oh, 100 and million percent. you know, it's. I think Hunter even admitted it in his deposition, although he's been shown to have lied at least three times quite egregiously in that deposition.
We can't trust Hunter. We can't trust Hunter or anything. But Miranda, thank you very much for coming to Americano. Please come back on again when your new book is out.
Thanks so much. Lovely to talk to you.
Thanks, Miranda. That's all for this episode of the Americano podcast. I'd like to thank my brilliant producer, Natasha Farrows, and urge you to leave a generous, kind, and warm-hearted review of this podcast on whichever platform you listen to it.